Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all around the world, you're listening to the first Let's Weekend show of 2018. I am, of course, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Felipe Odinolfo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, and Teresa Salmon. Say hi, everybody.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi, yeah. Everybody.
Yeah, we're currently all freezing to death right now. So,
as most of you probably are as well.
Yeah. Apparently, especially if you're on the East Coast, where...
The bomb cyclone went off.
Yeah.
I love these terms. We had like what the polar vortex last year.
Yeah. Basically, so like here up here in North America, every 20, 30 years or so, about 15 minimum, we end up getting what we call the nor'easter, which is when all the cold air kind of decides that it wants to
void.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Itself all over America.
Yeah, we're the only part of the world that is basically in a cold spell right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere else is above average.
Mm-hmm.
Which Trump uses as an explanation for why climate change isn't real.
You know what?
Like
Trump
isn't stupidity later.
Yeah. It's funny because if you see the sort of thermal maps that they put out right now, basically, they'll put out, you know, the Earth, and it's basically a sea of reds and oranges with a big blue spot up in the upper left corner. And that's us.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, here's this blue that's all over North America. Everywhere else is orange and red.
Mm. Yep. And, obviously, most of us are huddled up next to heaters and fireplaces. We basically live there now.
Yeah. What I call shut the door in my room and run my consoles.
Yeah.
That'll do it.
Well,
mine's some
PS4s are space heaters, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm using one right now.
I got some Bitcoin mining going, so that'll work.
Yeah. So, anyway, as we try to talk through, you know, we have to because otherwise our lips would freeze together.
Oh, my God.
On this week's show, we are, of course, going to be talking about numerous things, some political stuff involving everybody's favorite president. Of course, one of the main topics we're going to be talking about is the unfortunate, but no, just ash-holeless stunt pulled by one particular super popular YouTuber, and how his actions are probably going to have ramifications all over the medium. Yeah, get ready for the next adpocalypse and it's all his fault. Also we're going to be talking about some international news. You know that really shitty restaurant in, New York's Times Square that Guy Fieri started? Yeah, it's gone now.
Hmm.
I'll be talking about that. Yeah, we'll have some Netflix news, and yeah, also Amazon Prime members, they're really pissed at Amazon right now, and you'll find out later why.
Mm.
Also, everything in Australia wants to kill you.
Mm.
And
if
we
you
have
listen
more
to this
proof.
Weekend,
this
should
is
not
be
news.
Surprised.
Yeah. So, before we do all of that, let's get everything started. Phil, what were you up to this week?
So, I started on a very fun little sci-fi series called The Bobiverse.
Mm-hmm.
First by Dennis E. Taylor, and the first book is called We Are Legion, parenthetical, We Are Bob.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a software engineer named Robert Johansson. He's made a name for himself by building up a little niche software that, it's good for the industry that he's in, but didn't really do a whole heck of a lot else, except mm-hmm. really annoy the hell out of their biggest competitor, because... it was cheaper and worked better. So mm-hmm. naturally what happens there is the competitor decides to make a ridiculous buyout offer. And Bob, of course, being smart, cashes out. So we'll find Bob in Las Vegas chilling out, at a sci-fi convention because he's a nerd and I like that. He's on his way to a panel, crossing the street, gets hit by a car. That's kind of a problem.
Mm.
Fortunately for
Bob...
That's
not good for you.
No, that's usually how you get dead. But fortunately
yeah.
for Bob, he had just signed a contract with a cryostasis company.
Mm-hmm.
So he got frozen, And the story opens up with him waking up 117 years later. And America is very, very different in 117 years. Mainly because now it's a theocracy.
And guess who they worship?
Yeah. Jesus.
A dollar sign.
Yeah, no. It's run by a bunch of Jesus freaks. So it's basically we're like at the beginning of that right now, so yeah, pay very close attention. But beyond that, the book is amazing. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I won't spoil too much, but it's definitely worth reading. Just the idea on how, you know, artificial consciousness and whether you are you and whether cloning an artificial consciousness will get you the same thing or different results. It's got a lot of stuff that it tackles, and it does it in a way that makes it approachable and easy to understand. So it's fun. There's two more books in the series after the one I've just finished. So once my Audible credits roll around, I'm going to be getting those two and finishing that up. So yeah, highly recommended. Yeah. That's the Bobiverse by Dennis E. Taylor. So, check that out if you like fun sci-fi. Also, I started watching Mythbusters, the new one, because apparently it's back.
How is that?
It's actually not bad. It took a couple of episodes for those two new guys to kind of grow on me. But
so what are their origins? I know Jamie and Adam are very much special effects guys.
They're both very much science nerds. One of them is a biologist. Okay. And the other guy was a product designer in New York, but they both like do a lot of builds and building and stuff. They're both scientific backgrounds, so it works. They both work pretty well on camera. The first couple of episodes were a little rough, but they kind of got their groove back after the third one. They haven't really messed with the formula too much. It's basically Mythbusters how it was, just with some new folks. The methodology is interesting because it's a different approach. It's not being approached by from a special effects perspective. It's mostly by a more scientific perspective. So they come up with some really intriguing solutions to problems.
Okay.
But, yeah,
because I know watching a lot of the older Mythbusters stuff, they start a lot of episodes by just doing a thing, failing, and then be like, okay, we need to simplify this thing. It's yeah. Like they figure things out by doing it first rather than planning it out most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, there was one I remember in the older Mythbusters where they did that, and basically they ended up confirming the myth right there, so basically the episode didn't go anywhere, so they ended up dropping that. But yeah, this new one, so far they haven't done that. It's pretty good. There's 7 episodes in the new season now, I think. So, yeah, go ahead and check those out. I've watched the first 3. They take on the guy that gets stuck in a chimney when tries to go down into somebody's house to rob them through the chimney.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I've heard about that. The whole movie myth of the sword decapitation zombie thing. They try that out. Yeah, some fun stuff to look forward to. Yeah.
Like the whole thing about just cutting through their necks with, like, cheese?
Yeah.
Or is it something different than that?
Well, they used ballistic gel and a wooden dowel to start off with, but then they built something more, robust.
Okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's good. Kind of took me by surprise when Sonar goes, oh, hey, there's new Mythbusters. Oh, well, I should probably check that. So, yeah. Other than that, I've also rebuilt my home network because my router decided it didn't want a Wi-Fi anymore. So that was fun.
Oh.
Yeah. I had an Archer C7 V2, and I don't know, maybe it was flaky when I got it because it was never really quite right. And then over the past couple of weeks, it's like I've had to reset it every couple of days because the Wi-Fi had dropped out and there was no way to, get it going again. I've been power cycling it, and then finally it went, no, I'm done. I'm not Wi-Fiing anymore. So, yeah, got myself a Linksys EA9200, and that's been working quite well, even though it looks like a freaking alien head on my desk.
Was it one of those ones that looks like a robot spider kind of thing?
It's not quite so spidery, but it's got...
Is that like the Nighthawk, I think it's called?
Yeah, I mean,
it just looks like sci-fi nightmares I've had.
Yeah, this one's not quite. It's got kind of that old Linksys styling, but it's got like three antennas sticking out of the top of it and big giant glowing Linksys logo at the front, which I can't turn off, so it's blinding in my face when I'm trying to sleep. So that's great.
Electrical tape.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, those ones with like the bunch of antennas is like, you're just going to give me super cancer.
On the upside, the Wi-Fi works great now. So
even in the bathroom, right?
Yeah, so that's
yeah. That's always the good thing about upgrading like routers and modems and such is it's like, oh, the shitty Wi-Fi speeds I got, it's not because of my internet. It's because the router is old. The standard's old.
Yeah.
Just being able to have a much better thing, even if your internet can't take full advantage of it, your device is be able to take advantage of it better.
Yeah. I mean, I've never been able to use the 5 gigahertz band at all on any of the other routers that I've had that have even had it, because it was just too damn slow. And now with this one, the PS4 Pro and the Xbox One are both quite happy sitting on 5 gigahertz, and it's very fast on that band. So, I'm very, very pleased by that, because now Plex doesn't stutter anymore, so that's great.
And if it does stutter, it's for another reason.
Then it's IO based. So yeah. So
yeah.
Maybe a Synology is in my future at some point. Big ass.
Well,
ass.
Just not oversharing your libraries probably is best. I'm talking about another user. So much stuff.
I know.
Yeah. Well, I don't do that. It's like I have my up bandwidth on Plex capped at 5 megabits, so it doesn't matter how many people go, they can't saturate my connection. So
yeah,
they just screw each other over.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's only one person, well, two people who are sharing my library, so I don't really have to worry too much. And other than that, winter is terrible and it should die. So yeah,
but it won't yet.
No, so that's my week.
For a couple months at least.
Yeah. So how about you, Pat?
Well, more stuff continuing from last week. Site stuff, database stuff, forum stuff. I still don't think we're going to be quite ready to announce anything for another few weeks, but I'm really excited about this project that we have in the works. And it's like I said last week, once we actually get talking about it, it's going to be really hard to shut us up for a while. So enjoy this while you have it. I've been doing some related cleaning up in anticipation for it. Sort of needed to resituate my gaming rig because it wasn't entirely hospitable to the types of gaming I will be doing a lot more of in the very near future. And now it is. So that's good. And other than that, I've just been watching the Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Cooperation Cup pre-events. Tonight is the character teams, which they take like 5 people who all play the same character and have them do team sets against other teams of all one character. It's a lot of fun and a nice way to, start the weekend before the real team tournament starts. If you've never checked it out, it's a it's just a great weekend of Third Strike with really good players from all over the world.
Can't really go wrong there.
So that's been my week.
All right. Teresa, what about you?
I have been playing quite a bit of Civ 6. What?
No, it's not you. It's my cockatoo is making noise.
I wondered what that was.
Shut up.
I thought somebody was butchering a goddamn goat.
No.
Cockatoos are insane. That's awesome.
Yeah, they are, and he is noisy, and he's an attention whore, so.
Oh, that's cool. I've been doing the Jadwiga Poland thing, the scenario. So I've been playing through that and really getting my strategy down. It's hard to do everything you want to do and get the highest score in just 60 turns. So I went through, I had a few failures and I'm like, okay, I see what the hell's going on here. And, I've been kind of, running through that, on all the different levels and with the different, countries that I can play as. So, yeah, I keep getting invaded by Teutonic Holy Crusaders, and you know what? They can go fuck themselves, because they are pissing me off. But, yeah, I've been enjoying that. I'm really getting ready for the Rise and Fall expansion, obviously. That's coming pretty quick. But other than that, I have finished so many TV series, or at least got caught up. And now I'm kind of like, what am I going to do? So I think we're going to finish out Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We finished up The Crown, a bunch of other stuff. And then I'm going to go probably Mr. Robot. And then there's another one on Netflix. Oh, yeah. Mr. Robot's going to happen.
There's some stuff I could point you toward if you run out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been on Crunchyroll quite a bit, too. That's just me doing my thing.
Yeah, I'd say make sure you have a positive show to watch alongside Mr. Robot.
Yeah.
That's a very depressing show.
Yeah, I watched the first two episodes, and I really want to watch the rest of them. But somebody wants to watch it with me. So now that we've kind of gotten through everything, and, you know, I know, like, Rebels is starting up again, and what's the one? The Orville is starting. No, the Orville isn't starting up yet.
Yeah, just, the Orville just ended. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Star Trek Discovery is going to come back for their after their mid-season break. So there's not so much going on, it seems, in winter as there was in fall. So we can handle Mr. Robot and all this other stuff that everybody's like, you gotta watch this. And we should be good to go and get through probably, what, 4, 5, 6 more series before Archer starts back up? Because I am so waiting for that. But keeping up with other things like, you know, South Park and shit. And really enjoyed the last few episodes of South Park. It was great. But other than that, I was kind of up one night and I was reading some Ask Reddits about, oh, what's your favorite old game to get people who aren't gamers into stuff? And they brought up a lot of games that I've missed or that I want to go back and replay, revisit. And so I thought, well, what do I want to do with just $10 and buy up some stuff? So I'm kind of on a mini aged game spree. And I picked up, this is going to require me figuring out where the fuck I put my PS2. I hope it's under the bed. I don't know where the hell it is. It's here. It's here somewhere, I swear.
The slim one or the original?
No, it's the original.
Okay.
It's the original. It could be under the couch. I don't know. But
I was
going to
say
up...
the slim ones are like the size of a DVD case. Pretty easy to lose if you're not careful.
Yeah, they would be. But I got Need for Speed to Underground 2, so I'm going to play the hell out of that. And
the best thing about that game was the Snoop Dogg and the Doors collaboration.
Yeah.
Just, I didn't care for the game much, but that was awesome.
Okay. So I'll be spinning that this weekend. And then I was looking for Populous DS. And I went into ye olde GameStop next door to the sushi place. And I'm like, just by chance, do you have this really old game? They're like, we don't, but somebody in Crystal Lake has it. And I'm like, well, I'll fucking drive it 45 minutes to Crystal Lake. They're like, wait. Just wait. We can have somebody bring it here. And you could come back and pick it up. So I got the call tonight that it's there. So tomorrow I'm going to go get it. It's going to be good.
What game is this again?
Populous.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was one of the slew of Super Nintendo games that the asshole Alex stole from us. Sorry, I am not going on about that asshole Alex. And this was in, like, 96.
Oh.
Yeah.
Somebody holds a grudge.
Just a little bit. Family trait. So that's all for me.
All right. Chris, what about you?
So I've been watching a bunch of stuff. I've caught up on Game of Thrones, and there's a ton of shit that happens. Especially for a certain family that I've been fans of since the start. They finally get their shit together, and that's real satisfying when that stuff happens. Because there's a certain point where they just get scattered to the wind, and you're like, well, shit. But yeah, they get back together and there's some real shit going down now that they took this weird break, especially where they cut off, where it's like, oh, here's the good shit we've been building up for 7 years. Now we're gotta wait. Well, story on it, but wait quite a bit longer for them to somehow wrap it all up in 6 episodes, which is going to be pretty interesting to see how that happens. I've been watching a bunch of stuff on Netflix. They got 2 new Dave Chappelle specials on there. These ones are recorded after the deal. The 2 previous ones are some from his vault. So they had, you could tell just from the subject material that they were older ones, but the first one is probably not too long after, it's probably like mid-2017. So he's been able to take in some of the Trump stuff, as well as just the feedback to the first 2 specials, where there's definitely some not so great transgender jokes. And he talks a lot about that stuff.
I've been hearing about that.
Yeah, and he talks about how, complaining about PC people, not able to make offensive jokes. And my general response to that stuff is, if you can't make stuff that is not, if you can't make jokes without being, not politically correct, maybe you should write better jokes. And he makes jokes about how good he is at writing jokes. Like, talks about how he's a fishbowl he just puts punchlines into, and then challenges himself to figure out a joke to lead into that. And he does one of those during the show, which is pretty good. And he starts talking about the transgender stuff, sort of talking about how transgender people are kind of, their situation is kind of inherently funny, and that they are born into the gender that they don't believe they are. That is somehow funny. I don't really get it. I think he just spends way too much time trying to rationalize it when he should just move on. It's a really weird part of it that he tries to focus on. Some ways trying to half rationalize it and like half find excuses for it or whatever. It's not great, but most of the rest of it is pretty good Dave Chappelle stuff. The second show is one he did at like a really small comedy club, like 50 people, I think. And I don't think the people were notified ahead of time that it was going to be that until they got there, I think. Mm-hmm. So he has some really good bits there, especially the latter part where he's talking about this book. It was about a pimp who wrote a book like in the 1940s or something like that. And how there's some real interesting stories that is sort of just capitalism somehow dissolved into the things that pimps do. Mm-hmm. And sort of being able to tell that, they're women, like they have, a certain amount of mileage on them, and figure out ways to extend that or whatever. And just some really crazy stories, that he happens to know a lot about. It's some interesting stuff, but yeah, there's some not so great stuff about the shows, but the rest of it is pretty good. Especially when he's talking about how he knew that Trump was going to win the election because he was doing the early voting stuff here in Ohio, and talking about how before Obama got voted in, the lines were all full of black people that were energized to vote for him and all that. When it came time around for Trump, he was in line. There's a lot of poor white folk, saying things like, oh, he's going to fight for us in Washington, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, how'd that work out?
Yeah, thinking like, oh, you dumb motherfuckers. This is going to go real bad for you. And basically knowing that was all going to go down that way, but also talking about how, he might be the dumbest president we've ever had. That sort of stuff. And yeah, it's, and talking about how he had to go into Saturday Night Live, right after that happened, sort of be the guy in this whole country to ease people's minds a bit. and sort of talking about how he winged the whole monologue and thinks he probably ended it poorly by saying we should give him a chance, realizing that no, he didn't even really deserve the chance. He's fucked it up every time since then.
We're giving him a chance to hang himself.
Yeah. Also watched the rest of Fuller House season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been pretty good. They get away from a lot of the relationship drama around DJ, and start focusing on other stories, and that's where it gets a lot better. When it's not just, oh, will they or won't they sort of stuff.
Mm.
And they get this weird bit with Lonzo Ball of the Lakers. Like, somehow Steve gets an off... He's a... I forget what it's called. Foot doctor.
He gets a diatrist.
Yeah. He gets an offer to go be the team foot doctor for the Lakers or whatever. And somehow they send Lonzo Ball to beg him for that. Which ends up with him taking off his shoe. His Baller brand shoe and showing his nasty feet. and then getting beat in a push-up contest by a woman and then just leaving. It's probably one of the weakest other, you know, cameos, but it was a really weird thing. Like, you basically just went on this show to show your ugly ass feet on TV or on Netflix. Things are going real great for you. Also watched the new season of, watched at least a few episodes of the next season of Bill Nye Saves the World, which is really good. So they've changed up a few things. They have a new segment at the end that is Bill Nye meets Science Twitter. Mm. So taking some of the Twitter stuff that people send them tweets that do interesting things in various parts of the scientific field. Sort of invites them on to do a little demonstration and talk about their work, which usually leads into the next show. So like the end of the first episode, I think it was about cybersecurity. And so then they start the next episode is all about cybersecurity and all that. First episode was about marijuana, and particularly about how much it being a, stage one narcotic? Mm-hmm. Essentially stage one drug that prevents us from doing the research to potentially prove that it's not worth that classification, because that classification essentially says it's addictive and it has no medical benefits, which obviously is not true. It's been proven that it's not, but they can't really, you have to get a special license to do the studies on that. And there's maybe a handful of places in this country that has that. And fun fact, the farm that provides the medical marijuana for all those research studies is in Mississippi.
Yep.
So think about all your notions of what Mississippi is. It's also the provider of all the weed to the government.
Yep. That is 100% true.
Which I think John Oliver's joke is, please update all your stereotypes about Mississippi. So it's pretty good. And they go to Israel, which is one of the leading places where medical marijuana is studied. And they go to the facility and see that they're what they call the bunker, which they have over 5 tons of weed stashed in there. They do all sorts of tests on.
Oh yeah.
Now the whole facility is essentially treated like a maximum security prison, so you're not going to be able to break in and steal any of that weed. But talking about different ways of potentially creating sort of a pill form of at least the THC, I think it is, that actually could be, you know, be able to administer as a, you know, actual pill. That dissolves pretty quickly and be able to give you the effects without necessarily having to smoke it or use like cannabis oil or anything like that. That doesn't work as well as it should. There's a lot of interesting topics they've covered so far. I was just watching one. It was about extinction, which had Drew Carey on at the early part.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're just going over the various mass extinction events that have been over the course of this year's history, which involves like silly little bits and then a little bit of Price is Right in there. As Bill had like the little cards on the front that you flip the case off to show it. He had that on there for each of them to show like the here's the Triassic extinction events and that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's pretty well done. I'm sure Troll Twitter is still hating on the fact that he is a guy that is not a scientist, but has spent many, many years doing all the research and work in those sorts of fields.
Well, he's an engineer, right?
Yeah, that's mostly science.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think all the branches of science you actually have to learn and become competent in to be a good engineer?
Yeah.
Like mathematics and physics and just a whole bunch of crap.
Yeah. And has a good new batch of sort of celebrity, like on the marijuana episode, one of the panelists they had is Kevin Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Just talking about how he is a stoner who was not that very early on. He didn't start smoking weed until Zach Miri makes a porno when he's working with Seth Rogen, who's well known as very much being a stoner in the Hollywood, where he's very much like a high functioning stoner. Talking about how he basically got into it from him, because obviously Seth Rogen would idolize Silent Bob, Jay and Silent Bob, even though Silent Bob did not smoke weed, but also had other people on there. That's like one woman was working at Columbia, where they are one of the few places in this country that can research marijuana and all that, and sort of talking about the effects that it has and all that. One guy came from Washington State there. It was alcohol and cannabis board that sort of regulates the illegal marijuana there. Talked about how much the money stuff behind that has improved since it initially started. So it was like $200 million, $500, and then up to like $1.3 billion they bring in just from that stuff, which just for pure what revenue goes to the government is like $560 million just from people smoking weed. We'll talk more about that stuff in a little bit too. Playing some games, play more Lara Croft Go. And that's really good. It's a pretty cool adaptation of the Tomb Raider stuff to more of a turn-based thing that were obviously mobile games. But it works pretty well with the controller, though there are some like lag issues. So occasionally I move the wrong way than what I think, because it's kind of isometric, but they don't really make it easy to know which direction you're going to go in if you're not just looking at the controller.
It's a Q-bert problem.
Yeah. It's like the whole thing of knowing the full range of what goes, up and left versus what goes up and right. That sort of stuff. And there's no D-pad control, which you would think would make a lot of sense. Yeah, it's really cool. They have lots of like costumes and such you can unlock. Some are just based on other Square Enix stuff, like the Just Cause Hitman and Deus Ex costumes, which I just use Just Cause because it looks cool. But they have a lot of like classic Lara Croft costumes, like the one from the original Tomb Raider. There's like the one in the wetsuit, the one in the snow outfit from, I think, 2, and a couple others that you can unlock by getting collectibles. I'm in one of the expansion campaigns, which is really hard as hell, because they introduced these new kind of lava enemies that you can kill them, but they rebuild after like 4 turns. So you have to figure out ways to take them out, but do whatever you're going to do next really fast, because otherwise they can come back and block you in or do all sorts of things. Yeah, they don't fuck around. It was pretty easy to beat the main chapters in the campaign, and to get the credits, This expansion stuff is very much for people that have done really well at the previous stuff. So it's kicking my ass right now, trying to figure out how to solve some of this stuff. I've also been playing more Forza Horizon 3. Jumping back into that. Mainly playing the expansion stuff since that was on sale. I think it was like $10 for both of them together. Which was a good price, though I already owned Blizzard Mountain. So this was like the cheaper way of getting the other one. Because it was not on... The Hot Wheels one was not on sale. Specifically. But yeah. Hopped into Blizzard Mountain mostly. Which was pretty cool. They have just... random times during races that like a blizzard happens, in a sense, where it just gets tons of snow and you just can barely see what's going on ahead of you. And trying to race in that is really hard. So I end up having to replay races a couple times just to get the rhythm and all that going. Also started up the Hot Wheels just for a little bit. It seems like basically Forza Horizon version of Trackmania. Which is not bad. I just like some of the silliness with the way Trackmania does things. But it seems pretty cool so far in Forza. Though I've tried to play some of the regular stuff, and coming back to that after taking a break from it for a while, it's kind of hard to get back into. Cause there's like 100 icons on the map. Yeah. It's like, okay, what do I do next? Where was I at? Where's the main race is at? And it's like, it's kind of hard to find that stuff. But yeah, it's been fun to be able to get back into that enough. So I've been playing HQ Trivia now that it's on Android. So that is the big trivia game that's not too unlike One versus 100 was on the Xbox 360. Except you're not facing like a group of 100 people. You're just trying to answer all 12 questions that they're asking, trivia questions, and you win a share of the prize. Today at 3 o'clock, thing, it was $2,000, but only three people won. So they each got $666, which is pretty crazy. I got knocked out on a stupid cat question because fuck cats.
Dude, man, you should have texted me.
No, they give you 10 seconds from the moment they start reading the question.
Oh my God.
You're not able to Google, but people type all the answers in the chat just to fuck with people. So you can't even really cheat from the chat either. You would have to have somebody with some good Google foo on like a laptop or whatever, able to pull it up real fast, and I don't think we'd necessarily be able to do that very well. But yeah, the one they were doing on New Year's, because this thing went live on Android on New Year's Eve. But, you know, it's a great time to try to launch a new app that is very network-focused.
Yeah.
So they were trying to do one at midnight, or maybe right before midnight, and it failed, and I don't think they got started until about 12:20 or so. There was over 650,000 people on for that specific show.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you're basically facing that many people. And so, like, they show you how many people got the right questions. Like, oh, 100,000 people lost on this question. It's like, holy shit. I think they were giving away a bunch of money on that one. It was like $80,000. But it ended up being split up by so many people. It was about $11 people got out of it. I saw that they actually reached about over 800,000 people in one of the most recent shows a couple days ago. They do shows generally every 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock Eastern time, which 3 o'clock is not great for me because a lot of my work shifts end around 3, so I have to miss those, but 9 o'clock I can try and get into. The problem is it's not great about notifying you of like, hey, this thing's about to start. So it's like I got to start setting up Google alerts, Google Calendar alerts like, hey, this thing's going on, because sometimes it gives me notification. Sometimes it's like I get home at 3:30 and it's like, hey, they're starting a show. It's like, no, that was for 30 minutes ago, you stupid notification system. It's that sort of stuff. But to get the money, you basically just attach your PayPal account to it. And it will deposit it in once you get at least like $20. But so far I'm getting knocked out like 4 questions in. So I'm not doing too well. But you can keep watching it, because the host, Scott Rogowski, does a pretty good job of sort of being a somewhat entertaining host, though he does lots of puns and stupid stuff that you expect out of that sort of host. And they had a woman that was on for the show earlier today, and she was pretty good, though a lot of people were just complaining, like, where's Scott? Scott is dead. It's that whole sort of thing. If you remember our Day Zero update episode where I talked about the whole controversy about Scott not being allowed to do interviews because that supposedly violates some sort of branding thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real stupid thing, but they've gotten past that, but people still perpetuate they're locking Scott up in a jail cell between episodes sort of thing that people just joke about, where they just raise a prisoner, essentially, which is obviously not the thing, but it's still a pretty cool show game thing. I'm looking forward to playing some more of it and maybe winning one of these times. I don't know. They have to have the right amount of trivia I would know about. But apparently they put all this, so people record this stuff and put it up on YouTube so you can just watch the shows.
Oh.
So if you want to see it, I think there's a lot of that stuff that's up on YouTube. Which obviously does you no good because I don't think they repeat questions very often, if at all.
Mm.
But yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. It's on iOS and Android. And for what it is, it's pretty cool. I don't know how they're going to make money because they're giving away the money. They don't really do any ads as far as I could tell. But yeah, it's pretty neat. And that's been kind of it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first things first, Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I am now finally playing it in earnest. I've managed to tear myself away from Super Mario Odyssey since I finished the main campaign on that. Of course, I'm not giving up just yet. I still intend on getting all 999 moons. So,
Did you like the thing that opens up when you beat it?
What do you mean the thing that opens up when you beat it?
The new kingdom.
Oh, the Mushroom Kingdom. Yeah. Yeah, that's quite nice.
And has some really cool costumes.
Oh, yeah. And you also get to visit Peach's Castle, which is a nice sort of throwback to Mario 64, even though apparently it's all just one single room now.
Yeah, she's remodeled over the years.
Yeah. And apparently you have to possess Yoshi and you can't ride him, which is ass backwards, but...
It kind of has the same effect, because when you are done with him, you essentially, like, leap out of him.
Yeah.
Sort of a similar way, as you throw the Yoshi away and a new one takes his place.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so Xenoblade Chronicles 2, you know, so I guess you're thinking, oh, what's Brandon's reaction? So, first of all, it is good. It is very good. It's very solid. I will admit, though, that there are some issues that I have with it. And they're not really big issues. It's just these little oddities to it that kind of take away from the overall experience. So, first good positive is they've retained the, the mostly UK voice cast for the English dub, which is one of the reasons I loved the original Xenoblade Chronicles. Problem is, though, well, there's two problems. The first one is that because of the nature of the script, sometimes, well, one thing, the lip syncing is pretty much non-existent. it's English over from a Japanese script, so that's virtually impossible in and of itself. But also because there are parts in the dialogue where it looks like, there were like these awkward spaces and like lags and stuff in the dialogue, And the other major problem is that, okay, so you guys know the, one of the what the sort of like the sort of mascots of the Xenoblade series, the little puffball with rabbit ear things. They gave them also like a regular UK voice cast, and it does not work at all. It really doesn't, because for one thing, it's that their speech patterns are very different from the regular ones, and also because they have certain kicks and certain sounds that it just doesn't translate very well in the type of voice cast that they have. Now, they actually did it, no puns, that's what they're called, no puns. I can't remember, I don't know why I couldn't remember that. They managed to actually do this really well with Xenoblade Chronicles, the first one, because they actually got a voice actor who had a kind of cartoonish lilt to their voice, so it actually sounds like it, but the ones they got for this one, it just doesn't work. Like, it sounds like a Shakespearean actor, you know, doing Dragon Ball Z dialogue. You know what I'm saying? It just...
Yeah, I like the original because it kind of a very vibe of, like, Final Fantasy XII.
Yeah.
Where it has a specific art style that doesn't look like the anime that's 2 does.
Yeah, well, to be honest, that doesn't bother me much at all, because it actually works in the game. And it has like a healthy sort of balance between the art style of the first Xenoblade and the art style for Xenoblade Cross. But other than that, I mean, basically everything else about the game I love. I love the characters, the story. I love the battle system, which is not nearly as obtuse as Xenoblade Chronicles, the original, is. It's actually much easier to understand. They've actually done a lot to streamline, and also the hub is not nearly as cluttered either as the original Xenoblade was. Anybody who's played the original Xenoblade, you'll remember the player HUD that down there at the bottom, where you basically had to, like, there was only like 6 things that could show at the time, and you had to like scroll manually through all of them. Yeah,
big icons.
Yeah, you don't have that problem in this one. They've actually done a good job of streamlining and simplifying a few things, so it's much easier to understand. But yeah, so that's that. I haven't really gotten that far into it yet, but it's definitely a lot of fun, and I actually don't quite dread, you know, battles as much as I kind of did with the original Xenoblade. Yeah, so there's that. And of course I do still have Super Mario Odyssey. I'm planning on getting a Golf Story at some point to download onto my Switch.
Yeah. I think that Fast RMX Racing is on sale.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much else at this point. The NT Create stuff is on sale as well.
Yeah. But let's see. Other than that, so I've been listening to more Gackt music, because he's Gackt. He's amazing. He's God, basically. And I've been wanting to get a copy of the movie that he wrote, produced, and starred in. I'm trying to remember what it was called. It's part of his sort of overall what he calls the Moon Saga, which is like this sort of multimedia story he's worked on that's involved like. It's involved like a stage production. There's the movie. There's a couple of albums, 2 novels that he wrote. It's good stuff. And also because of that, I've sort of revisited some of the work he did with Malice Mizer. It's good stuff. Moonchild. That's the name of the movie. Yeah, it came out in 2003. And other than that, I've been doing my, you know, semi-weekly visit to the used bookstore, and I've been getting some, reading some books by, some of you guys listeners out there who are old school sci-fi fantasy fans may have heard of this guy. A guy, because he was really like a big seller in the 70s and 80s. He was a writer by the name of Jack L. Chalker. And Jack L. Chalker, you know, back in his time, he was a very, you know, he was a bestseller. He was known for, you know, some very neat, sort of out there, you know, mind-bending plots. These days, however, he's known for the fact that his books are basically loaded with, well, on TV tropes, they use the term author appeal. Jack Chalker was really obsessed with the idea of, how to put it, transformation. Specifically of a older man being transferred into the body of a well-endowed young woman.
Okay.
Well, he thinks that would be fun. I guarantee you it's not.
Something, something bleeds for 7 days and doesn't die, something, something.
Yeah, pretty much.
but his books are genuinely fun to read, and if you've managed to get some of them, I do recommend. His most famous is called the Well World series, which is basically about this planet-sized supercomputer created by this, like, several millennia dead alien race that can basically manipulate and, you know, essentially control the universe. And the way it operates, it has like this well of, quote unquote, well of little mini universes. So basically all myths are true.
Does that have the book Midnight at the Well of Souls in it?
Yep, that's the first one.
Somebody must have recommended this to me. It's on my Kindle.
Yeah. Well, I've got it on my Kindle too, so it might have been me.
It could have been.
Yeah. But anyway, so, and I've also been freezing my nuts off, so.
Which is a thing.
Yeah, so. Alrighty then, so, are we ready to get into the show prop? Well, first, of course, we have to do everybody's favorite part of the show, which is Brandon's Random Factoid. And since we're kind of already past an hour, wow, how did that happen?
Well, I know it's gonna add some length, but I forgot to mention that I did finish Doki Doki Literature Club.
Uh-huh.
That was not what I was expecting. I was underwhelmed. I don't know if everybody oversold
it's
it.
It's possible people kind of overhyped it.
Yeah. I mean, if I had gone into it with, like, no expectations, it would have been kind of, I don't know. But fuck people named Monica, I guess. I don't know. I have known a really nice Monica before.
Yeah.
But that was... I'm interested to see what the next project that they're already working on. You guys were talking about it before. I'm interested to see what that's going to be. I'll come back for more.
Yeah. But anyway, okay. So, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, not going to be a terribly complicated one this week. I just wanted to talk about because... I don't think people outside of the southeastern United States really comprehend the size and scale of this particular little issue that we have over here. Did you guys ever see that movie Creepshow?
Nope, I have not.
Okay. Mm-mm. For those of you who don't know, Creepshow is a movie that was made... It was a collaboration between Stephen King and what's his name? The guy behind the famous zombie movies.
George Romero?
Thank you, George Romero. God, I can't believe I was blanking on that. It was a collaboration between him and George Romero. It was basically sort of a love letter to like old school EC horror comics like Tales of the Crypt, stuff like that. And one of the stories in there actually stars Stephen King himself playing this hillbilly dude in the middle, I can't remember if it's in like rural Kentucky or something like that. And this meteor hit falls in his backyard, and it starts growing this weird plant-like growth that eventually ends up covering over him and basically suffocating him. Now, you would think that something like that can't possibly be real. Like, something like that can't actually happen in real life, can it?
Well, that would... I would assume they've never heard of a certain thing that starts with a K. Kudzu.
Yep. Kudzu.
It's everywhere.
Yes. That particular photo I'm linking to was taken in a rural part of Atlanta. So, as you can see, it's basically a vine that basically does not die. It grows, and it grows, and it grows, and it just doesn't stop growing. And you can't actually really kill it either. You can control it. But at best, you can kind of put it down to its molecular properties, and even then, it doesn't really die. So, not only is this shit really weird, because, like, I can drive anywhere. Like, I can just walk down my driveway and walk, like, a block from my house, and you'll see this shit filling up ditches and tree stumps and old houses. It's just everywhere. And this stuff is a major problem because of the way it operates, because of the climate that we have down here. It grows and grows, and eventually it just grows and suffocates everything in its path. And it's especially a big problem when, like, trees are involved, because, like, as that picture shows, it will actually grow so big, it will cover up trees, it will actually shade them from all light and actually kill them. It's pretty frightening, actually.
Yeah, we used to call them kudzu jungles because it's exactly what it freaking was.
Yeah.
It was just a jungle of it.
Yeah. So what's even weirder is actually how this stuff managed to get here. So kudzu is not native to the United States. It actually is from Japan. Specifically, it is the type that is down here is believed to have been somewhere from the island of Hokkaido. And basically back in 1876, it was given an exposition at the Centennial Exposition in Philadelphia. And then after that, in 1883, it found its way down to New Orleans for the New Orleans Exposition. Now, it was marketed down here as sort of a, for one thing, an ornamental plant, so that you could use it to shade porches. Oh, that was a bad idea. And in the first half of the 20th century, we started using it as cattle fodder. It was a high-protein kind of cattle fodder and a way to cover and a way to prevent soil erosion. So you're thinking, okay, so then what happened? How did everything go so wrong? Well, what you need to know is that by 1946, about 3 million acres of kudzu had been planted down here in the southeast. But then in the late 40s, we had a boll weevil infestation. And because of that, there were crop failures, like specifically cotton crop failures, which, of course, this is the South, so cotton was king. So farmers basically just had to, you know, pull up their post and abandon the farm, which meant that the kudzu plants were left unattended. And guess what happens to kudzu when you're not looking at it?
Gangbusters.
It expands like the blob.
Yep. And keep in mind, this is the South. And the thing about our climate is that it's really fit for growing particular plants and vines like kudzu. And because of that, it basically just spread. I mean, and it kind of happened under our noses. Like, I mean, at worst, by in 1953, the Department of Agriculture actually removed it from its list of suggested plants. And by 1970, it was actually finally given categorization as a weed, And then in 1997, it was placed on the federal noxious weed list. Now it covers over 7 million acres collectively in the United States, mostly in, of course, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Mississippi. It also has some in Louisiana as well.
It has a good showing in Kentucky.
Yeah. Oh, and did I mention this stuff is also traveled? Because guess where else you can find this shit?
Oh, God.
Nova Scotia.
What? Oh, my God. It is absolutely mind-blowing that it was brought here on purpose and planted. Yeah. This is horrible stuff.
Oh, and you folks up in New York City, you aren't safe either, because that shit's been found in all five boroughs as well.
Yeah, this is what happens when you even intentionally or accidentally get foreign plants and such that travel across the ocean. Yep. So I think the chestnut trees are dead here. Mm-hmm. They've been dead since the 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to bring them back. It's one of the topics that was talked about on the Bill Nye Show. By essentially taking the Asian versions and trying to crossbreed it with the strands from what little remains from the North American versions that has some resistance to the, I think it was some form of like mushroom or something like that was killing it. Mm-hmm. And sort of that has ways of surviving that stuff. So like potential ways of bringing some of that stuff back.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so, kudzu, it's slowly devouring the southeastern United States. Once again, for all proving that God does, in fact, hate the South. And that has been your random factoid for the week.
Example number 823.
All right, well, it's time to start the show proper, and of course, we got to start with our assholes of the week, and the first asshole of the week, there really is no way we could escape talking about this because, I mean, let's face it, if you've watched YouTube for more than 5 minutes, you are going to come across this at some point. YouTuber Logan Paul, who was doing one of his stupid vlogs in Japan, and because apparently they thought it would be a good idea to go to explore some hauntings in Japan, they decided to go into Suicide Forest. And they were laughing and joking around until they came across a freshly suicided individual hanging from one of the trees, from which they then zoomed in on, held long in the camera, and yeah, it was...
And I'll try to disguise this as like, oh, it's about suicide awareness.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, this guy is acting like a dumb YouTube prankster bro. And there's no way his tone is trying to be anywhere like solemn enough for that sort of thing. And also, they obviously knew they were going to find something like this.
Yeah.
There's no reason to even go to this place.
Everybody, I guess most people know by now, because of the way Japan's sort of ultra sort of meritocratic, like ultra workaholic kind of culture, basically people in Japan will get, basically they just grow tired of living and they go into this particular forest, which is on the edge of Mount Fuji, which means it has specific, not just, you know, historical, but also sort of religious and spiritual significance as well. And they throw a rope around their necks and they hang themselves. And
they use specifically these like really dense forests that are outside of the cities, mm-hmm. so that they can sort of do it in peace.
Yep. And here comes this douchequake of a human being, shows up. You know, say, no, we're doing this for the haunting. We want to see some ghosts. And they find this guy. And now, to be fair, even though he doesn't deserve it, they did pixelate the dude's face out. So, but, I mean, and to also be fair, I will also admit, if I was the type of person and I came across a fresh corpse, I would probably also start kind of, I don't want to say giggling, but like nervous laughter, because let's be honest, that kind of shit, there's not really a lot of, your brain has different ways of comprehending that and ways of dealing with it. But
yeah, I think the thing that goes against that sort of notion of trying to rationalize his response is that there's other footage of what he was doing on that trip in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him being a dumb American tourist.
Yeah.
And being a general nuisance to the people working stores and such, where he is going in throwing little plastic Pokeballs at Japanese people.
Yeah.
Like he's trying to capture them. Bringing up a Game Boy to a clerk and saying, oh, my Game Boy is muy broken-o. Being all sorts of dumb American shit.
It's just, it's cringy as all hell is what it is.
And even got to a point where Aaron Paul of Breaking Bad fame, mm-hmm. Basically tweeted about this guy, said, "Dear Logan Paul, how dare you disgust me? I can't believe so many young people look up to you. So sad. Hopefully this latest video woke them up. You are pure trash. Plain simple. Suicide is not a joke. Go rot in hell."
Yeah.
Basically, and when you get like major celebrities.
Yeah. Oh, also there's the fact that the so the video he put up, did you see the icon that they put up there? Like the, like, you know how every YouTube video has, you know, the preview screen?
Yeah, the thumbnail.
Yeah, the thumbnail. It was his, like, we you know, that shock, that sort of shocked face of his. And then next to it, they put the dead guy.
Oh.
Yeah.
And the other thing people should know is, while he's doing all this, he has a head on that's the alien, three-eyed alien from Toy Story.
Uh-huh.
He has that on his head. So it's like, he just looks as dumb as possible.
Yeah.
And I showed Teresa a picture of this guy, and she's like, yeah, this guy's a douche. Because he looks like it.
Total.
Yeah. And it just, his, all of his behavior and just the fact that he just didn't take, you know, he took all of this, he was just being an ass. Like, just a giant ass.
He would not have apologized for any of this if there wasn't a stink.
Yeah.
Being brought up to him.
Mm-hmm. And,
he's pulled it down. He put up an apology video, which he monetized.
Yeah.
So, you know, he still is trying to get the money he can out of all this stuff.
He's just a mega douche for that move.
Yeah.
And he's posted other Twitter apologies and such. Now he's, you know, going to take a break. You know, claiming he's going to reflect on all this. Like, his apology initially said, like, I've never made a mistake before, so I've never had to apologize. All that sort of stupid shit. It's like, no, you've never felt guilty about anything you've done before. Or had anybody call you out on your bullshit before.
Yeah.
And then you add all the whole notion that I would take a hazard guess that the majority of his subscribers are children.
Yeah, most of them are, like, around 12 years old.
And so I was like, oh, this is the guy that is what your children are idolizing.
Yeah.
No, it's woken up a lot of parents, I can tell you that much.
Yeah. It's like, you parents need to be very much paying attention to what their kids are doing on YouTube.
Like, I had hoped that the Elsa Gate thing would have whatever.
Or the even PewDiePie dunked on this guy.
Yeah, PewDiePie of all people. The guy who didn't know
neo-Nazis existed.
Yeah.
It says this guy's a fucking idiot.
Logan Paul.
Just.
Yeah, like his quote is, I've never faced criticism like this before because I've never made a mistake like this before.
Well, yeah, like this before. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's his qualifier, but it's like, you should still know how to handle yourself when you do anything bad. It shouldn't be, you know, thousands of people calling you a shitty person. to react to things like this.
Yeah. Well, usually the stuff he does is like, you know, mild levels of stupidity.
Yeah, but, he's one of those like pranker YouTubers.
Yeah, the just a prank bro douchebag.
Like it almost kind of comes off as an evolution of some of the stuff that Jackass did, where Bam Margera would harass his dad. That sort of stuff, where he would rip off his clothes while he's on the toilet, shit like that. It was really stupid.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's led to this stuff where they can do it on YouTube. They don't have to necessarily nearly kill themselves for attention. They can just be stupid and kids will be like, oh, cool. We'll give them 50 million views on their videos.
Mm. But basically what this has done as it was like it just resonated throughout all of YouTube. Pretty much any major YouTube personality has got something they've had to say about this.
Which ended up with like Boogie was trying to take a both sides approach. It's like, oh yeah, he's an asshole, but let's raise money for suicide charities.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, but you're still saying not willing to call him out. Now there's a whole thing with Boogie where he was shitting on a mentally ill person during one of his streams. And that's a guy that would never call out Gamergate people.
Mm-hmm.
He was always a both sides person. And he's a guy that never wants to rustle up any feathers. Mm-hmm. Because that's a potential one less person for him to work with to keep his money train going.
Yeah. And God, it was, I think really like the absolute, like, it seems in general, like in YouTube, it seems like there's been a major line that's been crossed here.
Yeah.
And that
Google is taking notice of all this, pulled the video down, pulled any mirrors down as well. And even taking some of the reaction videos as well down.
Yeah.
So they're definitely taking notice that some of these people are going too far because it's going to affect their ad stuff.
Yeah, like I said, adpocalypse is coming again. So, but especially what really got me is just the absolute negation of respect for the dead here.
Yeah,
like that was really the worst part of all of it. You know, because, like I said, I've actually watched the video, and, like, the way that, you know, so, like I said, like, they come across this dude, he had just hung himself fairly recently, apparently, because, you know, there wasn't any, like, okay, so, like I said, they pixelated out the guy's head, right? But you could tell that, you know, not extensive decomposition had started yet, but his body was like purple and bloated. So he had been, it was a recent event, but he'd been there for enough time for that to start happening. And, you know, if they had like stopped the video at that point, or, you know, just it's, you know, it that would have been perfectly okay. If he had stopped the video at that point, maybe we'd be going on about how it was just a really stupid thing to go into suicide forests, and he would have stopped. And this maybe would have gone over, and people would have boo-hooed about it, and it would have disappeared, and we wouldn't remember it.
Yeah,
but this guy actually went to what was once a actual living person, and basically using what I could only describe as exploitative camera angles and shots of this recently deceased individual, and like at the time sort of, I don't like using the term joking around about it, because like I've said before, like I said earlier, if I was in a similar situation because of the way my, you know, mind has to comprehend that type of traumatic experience, you know, I'd probably do some odd shit too. But it was the tone, really. It was. Yeah,
they have the intro here that he said. Mm-hmm. I think this definitely marks the moment in YouTube history, because I'm pretty sure this has never hopefully happened to anyone on YouTube ever. Now, with that said, buckle the fuck up because you're never going to see a video like this again, which is obviously prophetic because they're never going to allow this sort of video on YouTube again.
Yeah. Yeah, that and the introduction is even...
There's a part where he tries to act like he's surprised that this isn't just going to be a fun vlog where nothing serious happens.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I mean, how stupid do you have to be to go into a place called Suicide Forest and not expect to come across
especially when
a
you have a
somewhere
guy that is showing you this place?
Yeah.
Like, they're probably saying everything about what you can potentially find here before you get there.
I mean, and a lot of it was gross. It was gross all around, and he should feel bad. That's. Yeah, but I'm honestly not sure if he's even capable of that.
Yeah, I'm sure he's made enough money he's not worried about, you know, taking a break.
Mm.
He's just probably going to wait it out until people forget and then come back.
Oh, this isn't going to hurt Logan Paul at all.
No.
Because here's the thing. Even before this controversy started, that video had already garnered like a couple million views. So,
say 6.3 million.
Yeah.
And he has a rabid following that has been attacking people that are criticizing him in the video, which is not the way to do any of that stuff. Easy to tell how young his audience is when that's their reaction.
Mm-hmm. And it's gross. It was gross and... you know, there is people have been calling it the Logan Paul effect of like how we're desensitized to bad behavior, and
I would just say it's the internet effect.
Yeah,
you're desensitized to things that you're not directly doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a couple levels of filtering before it gets to you.
Yeah. On the flip side, though, this is a good example of the internet self-correcting because, oh boy, was that reaction ever vehement.
Oh, yeah.
And it went public in a way that not many YouTube controversies have ever had.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know.
I'm so glad this did not happen while school was in session or became a real big thing because, you know, kids at school have access to YouTube.
Yeah.
And that's exactly where the millions of views would have come from. There probably would have been more because, you know, every little sixth grader would have been like, hey, come look at this. Dead
body. Especially during recess or lunch or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yep.
That's why I'm glad we didn't have easily accessible internet in school when I was there.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, oh, I went to study hall and they had 9/11 happening on the TV. That was like, one of the few times you got, you know, a view of what was going on outside of the school.
Yeah. Seriously, I am seriously glad that iPhones were not a thing when I was a teenager.
Right.
Yeah, not growing up where you recorded everything you were doing on the internet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, because we got to keep it moving along. So yeah, Logan Paul's an asshole. Also, asshole of the week, our current...
Attorney General
Jeff Sessions. So for those of you who don't know, California officially began legalized recreational marijuana.
January 1st.
Yep. Largest state of its size to currently do that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody knows that Jeff Sessions the elf is apparently has some irrational hatred of marijuana that borders on the insane.
Yeah,
for real.
He quotes Lady Gaga lyrics about how she's addicted to weed.
Yeah.
It's not funny, cause look how Lady Gaga reacts to it. It's like, how does this elf know about Lady Gaga?
Yeah. But here's the thing. Until fairly recently, there was a memo, a marijuana guideline that was put out during the Obama administration, which essentially allowed states to have their legal weed law because, you know, states' rights, right?
Yeah,
isn't that what Republicans are all about? They drum that.
In general in America.
Big
so,
business.
Guess what Jeff
rights.
Sessions decided to do this week? He undid it.
Yeah, because it's marijuana. He hates marijuana.
I can think of two reasons why he undid it, and I think everybody all over the frickin' nation knows this.
Yeah.
His money from prisons.
Yep.
And his money from Big Pharma.
Uh-huh.
That, and he's an old white guy that thinks this is all about the black people.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that,
and
that
third,
was under
it was
the
something
prisons.
Obama put in, so that has to go.
It must die.
And he's doing the very much the un-GOP thing of taking away states' rights. And
yes, they are
the
very clearly squashing
thing.
States' rights here. And it's one of those things where, man, you can just smell the hypocrisy, can't you?
I want to say studies have shown that like more than 50% of Republicans are in favor of legalizing marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's not a huge majority, but...
It's a significant one considering what party we're talking about here.
I mean, the tax revenue.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
By the way, you want to really get pot use to go down in your state? Legalize it.
Yep.
Because
one of the things
all
they
the states
about...
who have legalized it have found a significant downturn in, you know, teenagers smoking the stuff.
Yeah.
So
the thing that the Washington State guy found is that they're usage of marijuana by teens, by underage people, because it's 21 and over, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The usage rate was the same as it was before. It's about 17%. Mm-hmm. So despite having legal avenues to get this stuff, the usage by underage people stayed about the same. So it wasn't increasing that stuff.
Yep. And of course, you know, since it's regulated in the way it's, you know, supposed to be,
mm-hmm.
they treat it like alcohol, and that cuts significant risks. So
yeah,
though it also has problems because still there's federal laws for marijuana that,
yeah,
you know, companies have problems putting that money in the bank.
Yeah,
because it can.
But it's only a matter. It's now really, literally, a matter of time at this point.
Yeah, because it's like the old John Oliver episode about that was sort of the notion that, you know, they paid their taxes in dollar bills.
Yeah.
And they couldn't take advantage of normal business deductions because this stuff wasn't federally legal.
Right.
But, it's like you get all that sorted out and they can be treated like any other business. It will boom big time.
Yeah. And of course, there is the question of whether or not Jeff Sessions is going to stay Attorney General for much longer. because of his constant recusing from the current Mueller investigation,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of folks both within and without the GOP who have or are starting to put on the pressure for him to resign and. That may happen.
Yeah.
Which is also drumming up stuff about Trump eventually getting rid of Mueller, which is a death warrant for himself.
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you already fired the one guy that was starting an investigation against you.
Yeah.
Now you're going to take out the guy specifically set up to supposedly keep that going independent of everybody else.
Yeah.
And you're still interfering.
Yeah, hold on to your hats with the Trump stuff because we got more of that coming up. But first, to wash out the taste of our mouths from that awful, awful shit, we have our hero of the week. And this week it is the country of Iceland, who has become the first country in the world with a law demanding equal pay for equal work.
And hell yes.
Yeah.
So they were already the top country in terms of the pay gap. It was says here 87.8%.
Yeah.
Which was still pretty good, but obviously not good enough.
Yeah.
But now they put out a new law that by 2022, they're going to close that gap. And it starts with public and private companies will have to pay employees equally regardless of gender, ethnicity, sexuality, or nationality.
Yeah.
And I think it's initially for companies with 25 or more employees.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to get certified to validate that they're complying with these laws.
Yeah, it's so the gender pay gap is one of those issues that when it comes up, especially on the internet, you're probably going to see blood. because
businesses don't want to give people fair pay for the fair work they're doing.
Yeah, so here's the thing about the gender pay gap that needs to be said. First of all, the gender pay gap is not a myth, okay? I cannot stress that enough. It really does exist. Why does it exist? Here's why it exists. Because high school girls are usually discouraged from taking classes in math and science that could actually lead them to high-paying STEM jobs.
Mm-hmm.
The girls, for whatever reason, I can guess, are usually discouraged from getting involved in the tech industry, which makes no goddamn sense, but...
As well as taking, like, higher-up jobs in various other companies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the pay gap is a cultural thing that we have ignored for far too long, and... Well, I say we've ignored for far too long. We've known about it for decades. I mean, we've known about it as far back as the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, then you have, like, the billionaires not believing it exists.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have their companies deal with that as well.
And how many billionaire females are in their inner circle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not many.
Yeah.
Not very many. And for the record, if you want to know what causes it, there's a handful of reasons. Discrimination is one of them. The other is child care and family responsibilities.
Yeah, we're one of the few countries that has no obligation to have, like,
paid maternity leave.
Yeah.
Is one of the big ones.
I mean, we're damn lucky as females that we don't get fired for taking time off to have a child.
Yeah.
It's at that level.
Yeah, like your job talks to you about, oh, don't come in if you have a cold because you don't want to get anybody else sick. But the moment you even do that, people are like, oh, that lazy piece of shit not coming in today.
Yep.
That's the attitude in this country, whereas everywhere else is like, no, don't come in. We don't want you to come in. Might be able to do remote work, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, don't screw the rest of us.
Yeah. Right. By the way, another major issue specific to the U.S.? Health insurance!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they don't have that problem in Canada.
Hmm. Or Iceland, for that matter.
Yep.
Yeah. Another reason, undervaluing of women's work and skills. Mm-hmm. Because apparently, if you're a woman, your vagina germs will apparently prevent you from, I don't know, chopping a tree down or something? I don't know.
It's just the systemic marginalization of women and the contribution that they can make to society.
It's the idea of women's work.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, well, there are certain things that only women should do.
It goes back to religion every fucking time. It goes back to religion.
Bitch. Another problem is, I already mentioned this one, educational and career choices. Because again, girls, for whatever reason, are usually discouraged from going into places like the tech industry. You know, getting into like the science and math classes so that they can, you know, get involved in STEM and stuff like that.
And especially if they start to have families earlier.
Yeah. Again, this is why a lot of the families, why a lot of the places in Europe have, you know, started compensate for that type of stuff with, you know, again, paid maternity leave and stuff like that.
And that's why a lot of people our age are just not having kids as early as our parents and grandparents did.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like, we don't want that shit right now. We got other shit we can do for now.
Yeah.
Mm.
Too much of a hassle.
As well as, like, not buying houses and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when you get down to it, of course, there's the amount of work. Now, here's the thing about the amount of work, and this is where the sort of idea of the gender pay gap being a myth comes in, because they mostly only focus on this one aspect. As far as, like, the collective difference between men and women, men work about 8.2 hours versus 7.8 hours for women, which whereas women in part time actually work longer than men do. So that's about like a 0.4 hour difference total between the two. And that justifies maybe a 5% difference in pay, but that's not the percentage that's actually the gender pay gap. It's much bigger than that.
Yeah, so quite a bit bigger in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. So
I will also say something that I'm probably going to regret saying because you guys are going to want to kill me. The only reason the guys are staying later at work is not to do any fucking extra work. It's to avoid going home and doing what they need to do at home.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't have a problem with that. There's a lot of people who don't have, home lives that they care to come back to.
Yeah, I know a lot of people don't do work in that last half hour that they're sitting around at work.
Yeah. All right, so Hero of the Week, Iceland. Way to go, Iceland.
Yeah.
Way to get ahead of us Americans.
I just need to fix that name because you're not Iceland.
Yes.
You guys got to trade the name with Greenland.
Yeah.
find some good trading terms there.
Yeah. All right, now it's time for the proper show proper. We're just going to go ahead and plan this. Thing's got to probably be about 2.5 hours long. So
2018 is going to be a hell of a year, so we got to get started on that.
Yeah.
We're getting everybody ready for this.
All right, so who's ready to jump off the Trump train?
Oh, I've been so done with Trump for years.
So basically, he started off this year by basically just going on crazy on Twitter on just about any topic you can think of.
Yeah, it's like you couldn't even wait a couple weeks.
No, it's just pure diarrhea of the mouth with this man. And
yeah, so they covered 5 major tweets he had. I think all of these are on January 2nd.
Yeah.
First one, I will be announcing, this is all in caps, the most dishonest and corrupt media awards of the year. On Monday at, I love this, I love dissecting Trump tweets. You can tell easily when he writes it, when somebody that actually knows how to write.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote 5:00, then puts o'clock after it. 5:00.
Fuck's sake.
Subjects will cover dishonesty and bad reporting in various categories from the fake news media. Stay tuned. So I guess we'll find out if he actually does this on Monday.
Yeah.
If he does, it's like, what the fuck are you doing, you idiot?
Just as a side note, and we've got this linked in the show notes, The Daily Show, Colbert, and of course Samantha Bee's Full Frontal are lining up for award consideration.
Yeah, so The Daily Show
might actually have a little campaigns going.
Which, they put up ads with quotes from people like The Daily Show. From Breitbart, political propaganda disguised as entertainment. From Fox and Friends, isn't The Daily Show a fake news show? The Rebel Media, Trevor Noah is an anti-Trump hack. The New York Post, monotonous .. liberal dogma. And then from Scott Bayo. When you, at Trevor Noah, learn what it means to be an American, then you'll have a say. Until then, enjoy our money and shut your pie hole. It's like his job is opening his pie hole.
Yeah. Also, nice way to treat a recent American citizen.
Yeah.
And somebody who comes from South Africa, where
His very existence was a crime during his childhood,
and he's talked about in his stand-up bits about the racism and such he's experienced even here.
Yeah,
being fearful of getting shot by police for just getting routine traffic stops. And I love the way that they end this. It says The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, so fake, even this ad isn't real. which they have pictures of it.
Yeah,
and such.
So the other tweet he put out.
Colbert has a thing, just lists a bunch of categories they like to be and have their own quotes, which one is #FireColbert. Linked it to Twitter/the internet. And Samantha Bee has her own things, like, this twat is a libtard idiot. Has that attributed to YouTube commenter. Life will be better when Russians kick your ass in, that sort of stuff. But other tweets, Let's see, he tweeted about the Middle East. It's not only Pakistan that we pay billions of dollars to for nothing, comma, but also many other countries, comma, and others, because English is this man's first language. As an example, we pay the Palestinians, in all caps here, hundreds of millions of dollars a year and get no appreciation or respect. They don't even want to negotiate a long overdue, next week, peace treaty with Israel. We have taken Jerusalem, the toughest part of negotiation, off the table, but Israel for that would have had to pay more. With the Palestinians no longer willing to talk peace, why should we make any of these massive future payments to them? It's like, oh, this is a guy that's trying to bring peace to the Middle East by doing no negotiating.
No negotiations whatsoever, yeah. And actively antagonizing them. Yeah, that seems like a great way to approach the situation.
Several people have died because of you.
Yeah.
And then he did fucking airline safety.
Yep. Since taking office, I've been very strict on commercial aviation. Good news, just reported there were zero deaths in 2017. The best and safest year on record. And in context, we haven't had no deaths since 2009. And this is not just a U.S. thing. It's coordination with various airlines and other countries around the world.
Well, Brian Cranston took after him. He's like, oh, great, you did this. Why don't you turn your efforts towards preventing wildfires and hurricanes in 2018?
Yep.
Ass.
Yep, Brian Cranston thanked him for preventing U.S. commercial airlines from crashing in 2017. Your active participation monitoring the flight patterns and safety regulations were graciously appreciated, which he revoked some regulations right at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes.
Well, there is one that I suspect is not legitimate. He did not actually do this. It says, since taking office, I have been very lenient on gun control. Good news, it was just reported that there were 15,541 gun deaths in the U.S. in 2017, the highest and best year on record.
And I think this is a lampoon of when he was trying to suggest the death toll not being higher in Puerto Rico was a great thing. Like, he was very proud of people dying, not as many people dying as there could have been.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Did you see the whole thing with the new book that just came out today?
Oh, yes.
The one guy that always posts parodies, just replaces people text in tweets and whatnot, basically created this whole supposed section of the book. And he does this all the time, so anybody that knows his account knows it's all fake. Mm-hmm. But obviously there are people that don't. So he wrote this whole thing about Trump being mad there wasn't a guerrilla channel. And it's had the aides just gather all of the documentaries on guerrillas and such and just create their own guerrilla channel.
Oh, my God.
And so now Twitter people are like, should there actually be a guerrilla channel? So people, like, the Trump stuff is also ridiculous. People actually legitimately believe that he thought there was a real guerrilla channel and demanded it when it wasn't a real thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that completely fits. I guess in relation to that, the president show that Comedy Central does got renewed for a second season.
Well, the worst tweet, I think the worst tweet that he did was the Kim Jong-un thing.
And North Korean leader Kim Jong-un just stated that the, quote, nuclear button is on his desk at all times, end quote. Well, someone from his depleted and food-starved regime, please inform him that I, too, have a nuclear button. But it is a much bigger and more powerful one than his. Which it replies here. Yes, right. Hillary Clinton, quote, she got everything right when talking about Trump in the lead-up to the election. She's said, someone you can bait with a tweet should not have access to the nuclear launch code.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
And the only button we know that Trump has is the Diet Coke button.
Right. It's the valet button.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if some of his aides are in any way smart, they probably put a big red button in his office that does nothing. And you just push it all he wants.
Did you see the thing with the new book? The guy that wrote it apparently had basically unrestricted access to the West Wing.
Yeah, for nobody, a couple of months. Ever, like, what, 7 months?
Nobody noticed he was
like
there.
Like, nobody paid any attention to him. So he was able to go in with his laptop and all that and just start recording stuff, writing down anything he saw, talk to aides and such, and get a lot of information. And Trump obviously goes in and tries to say it's all fake and all this. And it's just hilarious. He has he apparently had a dinner with Bannon and a couple other mid people, just getting all their sides and has all this stuff.
Yeah, and Bannon apparently had maybe or maybe not had one too many, and he just went off on Donald.
I think that's also just him being a nut job.
Yeah, but he basically went off on Trump and the entire Trump clan.
Yeah, because he's basically a dead duck as far as anybody taking him seriously because of the.
Yeah, he basically said that Eric Trump, what was it, Don Trump Jr. or Eric Trump, who had
basically said he had a treasonous meeting with the Russians.
Yep.
In Trump Tower, yeah.
And by the way, he is still technically the head of Breitbart.com.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, when this news broke, I was like, oh, God, I've got to go to Breitbart and see what the comments are right now.
So where do they stand? Are they on Bannon's side or Trump's side?
It is split down the middle.
Yeah. Okay.
Mixed with pieces of, conspiracy paranoia, end times prophetic talk, and full of people who are so completely unself-aware that it's hilarious. An actual comment I saw on there, and I'm paraphrasing here, but this is basically what it said. It said, I really don't know what to think about this. Can someone please tell me?
Yeah. So the last couple tweets Trump had, one was just about the New York Times, because they have a new publisher, and I know he looked this up on Wikipedia, because he talks about this is their last chance to fulfill the vision of its founder, Adolf Ox. It's like, you didn't know that. You had to go look it up.
Mm.
Here's a quote that he apparently said to give the news impartially, without fear or favor, regardless of party, sect, or interest involved, which they do. Mm. They criticized Obama plenty. They're criticizing Trump plenty. That's the freedom
Could
of the press.
Could be argued parts of them didn't criticize Bush enough during the lead up to the Iraq War, but
yeah, he wants his dictatorship where nobody criticizes him at all. Cause he has the thinnest skinned person that's ever been in office.
Mm.
The last tweets is about the Iran stuff that is going on, and blaming it all on Obama.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for those who don't know, Iran is kind of in the middle of a second revolution right now, and he's kind of trying to blame that on Obama. But
and he also links like the nuclear deal into that,
mm-hmm.
where apparently we gave them all the nuclear or whatever. They're giving them all this money, which is money that was frozen.
Yeah, once they started, it was actually their money.
Hmm. It's like, oh, we're giving them billions of dollars. Like, no, this is their money that they're finally getting after complying with all this, because every other country that's involved in that deal has said that they're complying with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no interest in renegotiating any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because the great negotiator can't get anybody to agree with him.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of the great negotiator and his absolute failure, so do you guys remember his little election fraud commission that he set up?
Yes.
Yeah.
The one that nobody was buying.
Mm-hmm.
That was just a way to get personal information from millions of Americans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically, they tried to subpoena every state in the union to get them to hand over their voter registration information.
Hmm.
Of course, every single one of them said, no, fuck you.
Yeah.
So this week, well, I think specifically today, Trump's or either someone in Trump's dad dissolved it.
I think he put out an executive order.
Yeah.
To dismantle it.
Because, again, nobody was buying it. It was very transparent what they were trying to do there.
And his tweet starts off with, many mostly Democratic states refuse to hand over data from the 2016 election. It's like,
and by many, he means every, all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. God.
My assistant rig must go to voter IT, which is not how it should be done.
If the system is so rigged, then how did you freaking win, you prick?
Yeah, because I think, so like right before the election, the Alabama senator election, there were any of the areas that had majority black population shut down their voter ID centers.
Dude, that shit happened in Alabama, during this recent election.
There's one in Wisconsin that is only open the fifth Wednesday of the month. That's 3 months out of the year, 3 days out of the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small town, so the argument is they can drive to one of the nearby towns. It's like, not all the people are going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Not all of them have the means to get out of town. And the fact that you have such a restricted access time is obvious what you're trying to do here.
Yeah. It's called voter suppression.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, in more news, hey, do you remember Orrin Hatch? Said he was going to, sure he does. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, Pat, you still there?
Well,
nope. Probably not. I think he fell asleep.
That's all right. It's Friday.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Orrin Hatch, he had said before that, no, I'm not going to seek re-election. I'm going to go ahead and retire, because he is the longest serving GOP senator in the country's history. Then he turned around and said, no, actually, I am going to seek re-election.
I mean, he won an award the other day.
Yeah. And then he turned around again this week and said, actually, you know what? No, I'm not.
Oh, wait, you all do hate me.
Yeah.
With a purple passion.
Yeah, which now people are saying Mitt Romney is going to run for his spot, which, okay, we're going to run out a guy that is in his 80s for a guy in his 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just an improvement.
Yeah, but they need a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a young woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that just sort of further the sort of down spiral of Utah turning further into a Mormon theocracy?
Sometimes you need a shake-up.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Also gets rid of Orrin Hatch as a potential presidential replacement if they get taken down.
Yeah, and I think now he's like the eighth or like ninth GOP congressperson who has announced that they're stepping down this over the last few months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's almost like they're afraid or something.
Yeah, that's weird how that works.
Yeah, but all right, so moving on from there, we got a story out of good old South Carolina. So you see, down in South Carolina, the GOP, because of course, like a lot of other places in the South, they were having their little their controversies over Confederate statues.
And the Confederate flag.
And so the GOP in South Carolina was working on a bill they thought would be a compromise, something that could be dedicated to black soldiers who fought for the Confederacy. But there's a little problem, as they've been working on this bill, in that they didn't exist.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, which, conveniently, the quotes they have here is like, oh, we're learning a lot from this. It's a good thing. The whole purpose of this bill was education. It's like, no, you were trying to fake all this shit to try to create some more both sides narrative shit.
Hmm.
Like, hey, black people fought for the South as well. It's like, yeah, because they were slaves.
Yeah.
They were slaves, or they were freedmen who were basically forced into service on pain of death.
Yeah, I saw numbers. I don't think it's here, but it was like something like there was about 1.5 African Americans per white person in the state of South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So they did not want to arm black people for fear of them revolting.
Yeah. Now, technically, there was mostly black regiments in Louisiana, in New Orleans, but they were unarmed and were never called out to service. And yeah. Union Army made its way to Louisiana, guess who they decided to jump ship and join?
Mm-hmm. See ya.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure you can't guess the party that these two state reps were.
Oh, we already said it was Republicans.
Yeah. And the bill would also require public schools to teach contributions of black people towards a Confederate cause.
Well, they did, you know, technically supply the cotton.
Yeah. But, they show when they were doing pension. Mm-hmm. These people, three blacks claimed armed service in South Carolina units under the Confederacy. Two of them were cooks or servants, and the other was just a slave. None for armed service. Hmm. So, yeah. That's kind of hard.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Let's see. There's another thing here. State Senator Darrell Jackson, Democrat, a black Democrat, and Senator Gregory, which is a great name.
Mm-hmm.
It was like finding out who the editor-in-chief of IGN was.
Yeah.
They filed a separate proposal to memorialize Robert Smalls, who hijacked a Confederate supply ship in 1862 and turned it over to the Union. Hmm. That'd be a much better thing to celebrate.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm.
Oh, God.
The GOP is just, yeah.
Damn it. It's just.
It's a comedy of errors.
Stephen Colbert, I think, is from South Carolina.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, and he's.
And I swear.
There was a good bit with on John Oliver of like, hey, here's some good ways to replace these Confederate statues. And his was just Stephen Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
He recites various state facts. Like they had the first like museum in the country in South Carolina and other things like that. They were the state that took the first British naval ship during the Revolutionary War. Mm-hmm. That sort of stuff, and it's like there's some really cool stuff happening here.
Yeah,
but they don't want to celebrate any of that stuff.
No. And as a Southerner, let me just tell you, neo-Confederates are some of the dumbest fucking human beings on the planet. And you know what's even worse? They're dumb motherfuckers who think they're smart.
Well, yeah, we got elected. We have to be smart. It's the whole whitewashing of history.
It's the lost cause mythology, and you would be surprised how prevalent it still is. But anyway, moving on. So next up, we got a story out of New Zealand, folks. So in New Zealand, they had a little New Year's Eve alcohol ban, right?
Mm-hmm.
They actually banned alcohol for New Year's Eve. I don't know why.
I think it's just to reduce deaths and incidents and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so New Zealanders basically did the most New Zealand thing you could do, which is they went into international waters, built themselves a little sand island, and then decided to just drink there.
So they went during low tide, brought all the sand they could, and built this nice little small island. There's a picture in the article. Put a picnic table on it, and had their beer and all that there, and just hung out as the tides rose.
Mm-hmm.
And basically claims, we're on international waters, thus exempt from the liquor ban.
Technically right.
Yeah. So I guess the fine they would have gotten is about $250 or $180 US or an arrest, but it seems like the cops actually were not that mad about it. They said, "That's creative thinking. If I'd known about it, I probably would have joined them," said the local police commander. Let's see.
Isn't that just like New Zealand to a T?
Yep.
Yeah.
It's just.
And I guess some of the people in New Zealand say the ban is not really working, was simply resulting in swaths of arrests.
Mm-hmm.
So people are still drinking anyway, but it seems like mostly drunk teens.
Yeah.
And so it's just creating more work for them, because now these people that were not going to get punished anyway are now getting punished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, anyway. So, moving on from there, more proof that apparently the devil lives, and he lives in Australia. There's an elementary school in Australia, and of course, like many elementary schools, they have little sandboxes that you played in. I know I did when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, though Australia has lots of sand.
Yes. Little problem about the sandbox, though. They did a little bit digging, and they found 43 snake eggs.
Yeah. Initially, they thought there were, what was it? I think brown snakes?
Yeah.
One of the deadliest snakes in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
But they, for whatever reason, they didn't actually, like, capture one of these things and try to figure out specifically what it was.
Mm-hmm.
They just took them out of there, and most of them hatched and left.
Mm-hmm.
So they just take the eggs and shine into them. They can sort of see what sort of stripes they have on them, and they figure out they are probably a mostly harmless breed. I'm not sure where it says what they were.
Still, it's best not to take a chance.
Yeah, because this is Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're called water dragons.
Ah.
I think that's what they think. Yeah.
You know, there's a reason why I'm convinced that if there ever is a real Superman, he's probably going to be born in Australia.
Well, this is why the British sent their prisoners to Australia. They either serve out their terms and, you know,
come back, or
they die.
Yeah.
A lot of them did survive, and then we get AC/DC, so
yep. It
works out.
AC/DC, NXS,
yeah.
Couple other bands, Midnight Oil, yeah. Well, anyway, damn it. I'm convinced that Australia is basically the closest thing we have on Earth to a death world, where basically everything in God's design seems to be specifically created to be hostile to human life.
Yep. Like the planet in Predators?
Yeah.
Yep. Just, I would not be surprised if there is a species of poisonous grass that could kill you instantly if you walked on it.
Mm.
Because, God damn it, that's just about everything else in Australia wants you dead.
Yeah.
But, anyway, so, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know if they've explored every single square mile of Australia, so you never know.
Well, there's still parts of the outback they haven't gone into yet. So.
Yeah, because they were finding a lot of, like, evidence of dinosaurs and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So, here's an oldie but a goodie. So back in the early days of the internet, we had a big problem with email scammers. Now, technically, we do still kind of have this problem, but they shifted over to other territories, shall we say.
Like Irish lotteries and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, but probably the big ones that we had, biggest problem is, we call it the Nigerian Prince, even though it's only the sort of Nigerian Prince is only one form it actually takes. And in fact, apparently, it actually predates the internet by quite a good deal.
Yeah, they used to do it paper letters as well.
I heard they actually used to do it on telegraphs. Yeah. Also where spam mail first started, too.
Yeah.
Telegraph machines. I'm not joking. Look that shit up. But, so the way that these Nigerian print scams works is they email you from some random part of God knows where, and they tell you, I am so-and-so, I have a bunch of money that I want to give to you, but I need to have you, I need your banking information, blah, blah, blah.
And then you send me some money.
Yeah, so that the transaction can go through, blah, blah, blah. Like that, and it takes a million different forms. Well, we found out one of these Nigerian print scammers is, and it's an old white dude in Louisiana.
Yeah, so he is 67 years old.
Mm-hmm.
269 counts of wire fraud and money laundering.
Damn.
Serving as a middleman in the variation of the so-called Nigerian Prince scam. Which, the specific thing he was doing predates the days of dial-up.
Mm.
So, one iteration, someone claims a benefactor, left you an inheritance, but your bank account information is needed to transfer the funds. Some versions, they ask the victim to send money, that will be reimbursed. There never is, and you never get the money back because you're supposed to send it like Western Union.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or some way that is not easily traceable like you could through like PayPal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very few of these people ever get caught, so this is obviously a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these people are outside the U.S.
Yeah.
So it's hard to prosecute these people, but hey, there happened to be one in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And they obviously reiterate, like, don't give out personal information or the phone, email, send people money for nothing, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because 99% of the time, it's a scam.
Yep.
And unfortunately, these particular individuals tend to prey on older and the elderly.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately happened to my grandmother recently.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she got her computer hacked in, too.
Shit.
Oh, yeah. One of those Microsoft phone call scams?
Yep.
That's why I'm glad my... The only hacking my grandma gets is she forgets her password.
Yeah.
Somehow the thing she wrote down is her password is not the password, which astonishes me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but it's also like a, it's like one of those phone books that you write your stuff into that she just uses for email and passwords and such.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of the liquid paper. Oof. So rewriting over and over again. So it's like, oh, God.
Yeah. Well, all right.
That's the reason why we don't use phone books anywhere. We just use our phones.
Mm-hmm.
Because writing this shit is annoying.
Yeah.
That's why we don't know anybody's phone numbers if you ask us.
Word.
No, I just click on the thing that says mom. Hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know what her phone number is.
Well, all right. So next up, before we started the show, we were talking a little bit about Logan Paul's brother, Jake Paul, and the antics he does in Beverly Hills. And I mentioned that I am all for advocating burning Beverly Hills entirely to the ground and then salting the earth so that nothing ever grows there again.
Yeah.
There's only one other place in America I would like to do that, and that's Silicon Valley. But here's the good thing. They might be doing our work for us, because apparently the latest craze in Silicon Valley is quote-unquote raw water.
I saw something about this on Imgur. I thought it was a joke.
No.
Is this for real
shit? They're for real.
Yeah.
This comes out of the people that are...
pond water.
Yeah, this comes out of the conspiracy of the fluoride in water.
Mm-hmm.
But it's involving the rich people that believe this stuff is actually real, that it's, you know, sterilizing us or a mind control drug or any of that number of other crap. So they need the raw water that is not treated, it's not sterilized, or
there's
not
shit
safe to drink.
They can swim up your urethra.
Yes.
You get microbes from this that will give you cholera, dysentery,
yeah.
You know, all that stuff that the Amazon and the Oregon Trail games like, that's all shit.
Yeah.
Okay,
humans have been trying to treat water for thousands of years because of this shit.
And we finally came out with fluoride, which actually works.
Except for if you're in New Jersey, they don't have fluoride for whatever reason.
Well, yeah, we bleach, we put chlorine in the water for drinking so we can live.
And for swimming in, and for...
Yeah, because humans are gross and nature is gross and it's all gross.
Like, there's a reason why in the Western world most people avoided water and drank alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Because the water would kill you.
Yep.
And it probably anything would be in the process of making the alcohol.
Yeah. But
yeah, they sell this stuff. It's ridiculously expensive. I think I saw something like...
Because of course it is.
$60 for like 2.5 gallons.
Yeah.
They're going into ponds for fucking real?
I'm not sure where they're getting water from specifically. But yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if this CDC is like one of those scams one of those like bottled water places came up with.
Yeah.
You know who's involved in this?
Who?
One of our favorite people, the Juicero guy.
Oh, Lord.
The guy who tried to sell you high-tech juicing machines that just had a machine that squeezed juice out of a packet is involved in raw water.
Okay. Now
I would like to say something here about the idea of survival of the fittest and nature is
mm-hmm.
working by killing off people too dumb to live. If it weren't for the fact that that's actually not what survival of the fittest is actually about. But,
exactly.
But, you know, just there's a point when you're like, you know, you have to let stupid people have a certain amount of freedom for it to be stupid. If at least so that there's the potential they can take themselves out of the gene pool. And
yeah, let them do that. Maybe, you know, if enough of them go, it'll end up bringing the property prices down in San Francisco, which, yeah, that's a big problem over there.
Or maybe it'll backfire spectacularly and people will finally realize that, no, fluoride is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, the Flint, Michigan stuff is like the worst of what can happen to even treated water.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the raw water is even worse than that. Way worse.
Yeah.
Because it can kill you.
Yeah.
You just, this is common fucking sense. Anybody who has been out of their back door knows that you're careful.
This is what happens when you try to take the hipster organic stuff too far.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's organic water. It's like, you don't want organic water.
That's about as organic, you know, as you're gonna get.
There is such a thing as organic water. It's called rain.
And you don't want to drink that shit either.
Oh.
I'll stick with my flu vaccine and my chlorinated tap water. Fuck that.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna be right there with you.
But
it's like, as much as people make fun of Americans for bottled water, it's like, at least that is treated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is gonna kill you.
Yeah. But all right. So moving on from there, Intel. Intel Inside.
Oh, God, they're in trouble.
Yeah, so people have been looking at the chips they've been putting out since 1995, and holy shit, it has got some major holes in its security.
Yeah, this is crazy because it affects computers, TVs, your phones, tablets, anything that has an Intel chip in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty crazy.
There's not much to do except make sure Windows is fucking updated, people. Yeah,
make sure you download any of your updates. And don't open the fucking extensions and anything attached to your emails and anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Don't go to your sketchy websites. At least not without ad block or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, the silver lining on this is that it hasn't been exploited yet. Exploit it is not trivial.
Although they certainly as hell are going to try now.
Oh, I'm sure they're going to try. I mean, Intel is going to be patching a lot of their CPUs at the microcode level, so that should get rid of some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll need all new ones when they get those out there.
Yeah, which, not the first time something like this has happened to Intel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember the original Pentium?
Yeah.
They didn't do shit about that either, so.
Nope.
Yeah.
Well, they're at least saying that Meltdown, which is the one that, you know, can steal your passwords and shit, that patches have already been released for Windows, for Mac, for Linux, and then also for a couple of browsers like Firefox and Internet Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, so, patch your stuff and, buy AMD. So that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was interesting to see that. This was largely discovered through Google and various other researchers, which happened to find it. Like, holy fuck. Because think about all the machines that maybe cannot be updated or are running on older OSs. I know my last job, there was a fairly big machine that was running on a computer that was running Windows 98.
Mm-hmm.
And it was no simple test to restart that thing if it had problems.
No shit.
And it was amazing to see, like, oh, there's this big expensive thing you paid, you know, maybe $1 million or $2 million for, and it's running on fucking nearly 10. At this point, I think when I worked there, it was like 10 years old. But that's, still.
Yeah.
That's nothing. I mean, there's some government installations that still have computers in there from the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like all our nuclear silos are running on very old stuff,
but which also actually is fine. Yeah,
because the ability to hack into that stuff is not easy the older it gets.
Yeah,
nope.
The only people that know how to program it are like have gray hair at this point. So
you have to have remote access to them.
Yeah,
you have to actually go out and find those silos and such.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, all right. So, we got three more stories here. Four more stories that we're going to do, and then we're going to cut it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So next up, guess who was going to be making an appearance at the Consumer Electronics Show this year?
Oh, it's your favorite FCC commissioner, Mr. Ajit Pai.
Yeah, he's not going this year. Guess why?
I wonder.
Probably because he would have ended up dead.
Yeah,
it's almost like you maybe shouldn't pass legislation that makes everybody hate you enough to want to send you death threats.
And maybe, you know, adversely affects everybody at the show that you're going to.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Man. That is a degree of complete unself-awareness that is... Wow.
That's just borderline stupid.
Yeah, it is.
Like, stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
So he's not going to be making his appearance, which is good, because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
He is... Oh, man, that man is never going to have another job again. Yeah.
On the one hand, I don't advocate the fact that, you know, people made death threats, but
it's
kind of maybe, you know, you reap what you sow.
Yeah. Those who sow the wind reap the whirlwind. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, but, when you treat them like they're meme and self-loving idiots,
yeah,
you've kind of undermined
everything.
The audience that you're talking down to. And, of course, they're going to lash out at you.
Yeah.
Yep. But, all right. And next up, we got sports story. Buffalo Bills. Buffalo Bills fans donate $100,000 to a
Cincinnati Bengals
for the Cincinnati Bengals charity as thanks for a playoff berth.
So yeah, this was one of the last games played last Sunday that had an effect on the playoffs. So the Cincinnati Bengals were playing the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore Ravens were 9-6. They win and they're in. They lose and they're out. And Andy Dalton, the quarterback for the Bengals, managed to complete a 4th-and-12 play to get them a touchdown in the win right in the last minute. And as a thanks for that, that helped beat the Ravens, who then opened the spot for the Bills to make the playoffs for the first time in 17 years.
Mm.
So as a thanks for that, Bills fans basically started donating $17 to his charity, which helps pay for medical bills and other sorts of stuff for kids that are mentally ill or have cancer treatments or various other disorders and physical issues that they need. So they eventually piled up to the point where I think it says here they're at about $300,000 now. And it shows that there are some great things that can happen with when sports fans get into this sort of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not all drunken idiots. Let's just point that out.
Yeah.
No, but when they're sober long enough to do something good, this sort of stuff can happen. Yeah. There was some cool thing where the Bills fans had a beef with a player on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Mm-hmm.
Sent him trash cans, calling him a trash quarterback. And so he had a couple of players on his team help him fill those trash cans with toys and donate them to charity. So it's like, okay, you took this really dumb thing that fans of another team did and turned it into a good charitable thing.
Yeah, when you get...
That's pretty cool.
When you get lemons.
Yeah. And I mean, they make plenty of money to be able to pay for that stuff. Yeah.
But all right, so next up, penultimate story of the night. Guy Fieri's much maligned restaurant in Times Square.
Has 0 stars from the New York Times.
Yes. Guy Fieri, the only man in America still living with a pre-9/11 mindset. That restaurant is now gone for good. It is shutting down.
And it's called Guy's American Kitchen and Bar.
Yeah.
which I like his attitude.
Yeah.
Which is always positive, and he apparently does a lot of charity work, so good for him.
Yeah.
It's just, he comes off as like the smash mouth of the celebrity chef world.
Like I said, he's living like it's still 99.
Which,
like, even his fashion sense.
Yeah, so this restaurant is shut down. No real reasons offered, at least publicly.
Yeah, I wonder.
But they did include some quotes from the original New York Times review, which goes, "Did panic grip your soul as you stared into the whirling hypno wheel of the menu, where adjectives and nouns spin in a crazy vortex? And you saw the burger described as Guy's Pat LaFrieda custom blend all natural Creekstone farm black Angus beef patty, LTOP lettuce tomato onion pickle, SMC super melty cheese, and a slathering of donkey sauce on garlic buttered brioche. Did your mind touch the void for a minute? What exactly about a small salad with 4 or 5 miniature croutons makes Guy's famous big bite Caesar A, big, B, famous, or C, Guy's in any meaningful sense? When you have a second, Mr. Fieri, would you see what happened to the black beans and roasted squash soup we ordered? What is going on at this new restaurant of yours, really?"
And then, of course, there's the question of his quote-unquote donkey sauce, and which part of the donkey does it come from?
I don't want to know.
Yeah, so that's down.
Thank God.
Oh,
yeah, which, yeah. I think a lot of people are like, oh, is it going back to Flavortown?
Down to Flavortown.
And now, finally, our last story of the night. There was at Jeopardy, which I still watch on occasion. To be honest, I prefer it over Wheel of Fortune, believe it or not. By the way, what are the six words that Alex Trebek hates most?
Moist.
I'd like to buy a vowel.
It's whatever joke Will Ferrell came up with all those Celebrity Jeopardy bits.
But anyway, so there was a contestant on Jeopardy, and he recently lost $3,200 for mispronouncing the title Gangsta's Paradise.
Yeah, so the clue was a song by Coolio from Dangerous Minds goes back in time to become a 1667 John Milton classic. And he said Gangster's Paradise.
Lost.
They accepted it, but the judges came back and ruled that he mispronounced that.
Yeah.
And he did. They are two different words, but oh my God, the sour expression on that guy's face. I mean,
there are some great bits of this sort of thing on Wheel of Fortune. There's a guy that solved, he got all the letters except for one. It was Corner Curio Cabinet. He said Corner Curio Cabinet. And there's a great bit on, like, video clip of it on YouTube where it's just, immediately after he says just, eh. The next person's like, Corner Curio Cabinet? It's like, yep. There's one bit where they had college people on. There's a guy with from Indiana who got the $1 million pieces. And went to solve it and fucked it up. I'm trying to see if I can find it. Also got the two halves of the car. Went to go solve it. Failed it. And then a third time had the final thing and solved. Okay, yeah. So he got it, all the letters on the first one. Mythological hero Achilles. He says mythological hero Achilles.
Yeah. Well, okay. Aww. For that I actually would have given it to him.
Yeah, but they're real sticklers for pronouncing, because it's like you have all the letters, you have no.
Yeah, well, what if you have a speech impediment?
I think they probably know about that ahead of time. If these people are here.
They will read them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was also the later ones. Let's see. Ah, crap. Add. Okay, 3, 2, 1. I can skip. Okay. I hate those stupid things. Yeah, so he gets the half of the car. World's fastest blank A blank. You would say man, right? Okay. He says cat, I think it is. Or no, he picks a seat because after he spun it and got the other half of the car.
Shit.
And so the girl right after him is like, "World's fastest man?" It's like, "Yep." And she just keeps winning $1,000 because that's the minimum you get if you solve it. And then the next one, the final one where he gets a chance to solve, it's, let's see, he's missing, I think, all the vowels in on-the-spot decision.
Mm-hmm.
He says, "On-the-spot dice spin."
Okay, that's just...
And the girl next to him looks at him like,
"Are you fucking
is this kidding? Real? Is did I just hear him say dice spin?" Here's the video for that. The guy in the middle, and he just has the worst round of Wheel of Fortune that has ever happened.
Yeah.
But right. Suffice to say,
well, yeah.
Jeopardy, kind of a high-pressure situation. Kind of easy to make that kind of investment.
Yeah, but anyway, so...
Hey, Alex Trebek does not fuck around.
No, you don't fuck with Trebek.
Mm-mm.
Canadian, your ass.
He could have you killed. But anyway.
Killed.
Yeah. Anyway, so, we're going to end it there tonight. We know we ran a little long this time, but fuck it, it's the new year. We kind of had to. You'd be surprised just how much shit can happen the first 5 days of a year. But anyway, so I would like to remind all our listeners, if you have a question you want to ask us, write into the show, anything like that, you can contact us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. Also, on top of iTunes, you can catch our little cast at Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and all places where lovely shit shows like ours are sold. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Felipe Donalfo, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie, I'd like to say good night, sleep tight, hopefully the hangover is over by now.